This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined as always on Mondays as the calendar flips to December. December to remember. Bowl season, baby. We love bowl season, but we don't know the bowl matchups yet. We won't know them till Sunday. We won't know the playoff as well. But Adam Burke is here, as he always is. And Adam, we got a lot to get to. We got coaching changes. We got tiebreaker madness. We have just a bunch to jump into. But I want to start with this. As the Ohio State fan, watching that and watching Michigan, after getting their ass kicked, stand in the middle of the field to avoid a flag planting, how did Saturday feel for you?
It was satisfying. I'm disappointed that our producer is Rick today instead of Wyatt. So I can't, you know, let Wyatt sit there and just take it while I rub it all in here.
No, but I'm just saying Wyatt magically, I don't know, he's off today. You know, it's right? Interesting. He's got a trip to Texas with UNLV women's basketball, you know.
Yeah, oh, that's right. They're in San Antonio. I gave him a couple of recommendations of places to go down there. But yeah, I mean, it was satisfying, right? Because they dismantled Michigan. I mean, that's what this year's Ohio State team should have done. Honestly, that's what last year's Ohio State team should have done, too. Probably the year before that, too, and so on. But, I mean, look, Julian Sain threw that pick, and then he was phenomenal the rest of the way.
Yep.
Bryce Underwood did absolutely nothing. Ohio State, you know what Ohio State did? They accomplished what Ryan Day always wants them to accomplish. They were way more physical than Michigan in that game at the point of attack. And so that was something that was nice to see, because they were able to do that without Ryan Day having to, you know, just like make that his thing, have that be his credo throughout the course of the game. Like, they ran the football effectively and they threw it effectively. So it was a complete performance. Also good to see Saiyan shake off the pick, because he's a kid out of Carlsbad, California, right? Like, he doesn't play in that kind of weather ever. So good to see him shake off the pick and then look really good after that. Curious to see what happens this week in a game that, oddly enough, doesn't really matter that much for either team. But it was really, really satisfying. And, you know, I mentioned it on the show last week, and I was a little bit concerned. You know, I would have taken Michigan if I had to, getting the 10.5, 11 in that range, just because low scoring expectation, bad weather for Saiyan, so on and so forth. But it really, truly does feel like that playoff run last year for Ryan Day just let all the, you know, bad air out of that balloon. And I don't think that he overthinks things anymore. I don't think that he's intimidated about, you know, keeping up Urban Meyer's standards or the Ohio State standards. Like, he felt like a guy coaching that game with a huge weight off of his shoulders already. And I think the team fed off of that, and they played free and easy. They weren't tight at all. It was really, really good to see. And I think it's a good thing for Ohio State going forward, because Ryan Day is there as long as he wants to be.
Since the loss to Michigan, Ohio State is not only 16-0 straight up, 14-1-1 against the spread. Just remarkable, the run that they've been on, everything. I mean, you think about those three weeks, which started a year ago today, essentially, of just nonstop crap talk. Tennessee's going to take over Ohio Stadium. They're going to win. Ryan Day is going to be fired. Well, lo and behold, as we all know, they take care of business. I'm mad at myself. I got too cute. I took first half under instead of playing full game under. I did talk about on the tailgate show to take some Michigan team total under. So at least I got a little bit there. But one of those situations where you think a little too long and hard, and you're like, I'll go first half under as opposed to full game under. Well, the opposite happened. First half over hit, full game under comes home with ease. I want to mention this, regarding the Heisman, because you mentioned this weekend, Indiana and Ohio State. It felt like 2 months ago we said it'll be a Heisman off in the Big Ten championship. And then a lot of different things happened. You know, Jeremiah Love had a run, and then Diego Pavia plays as well as he did on Saturday. Jeremiah Love is out. He got banged up in the Stanford game, got a knee to the ribs, and only finished with like 58 or 60 some odd yards. So he will not factor into the Heisman Trophy race. The question right now, as I look at the odds, Is it as simple to say the winner of this game wins the Heisman Trophy, or is there a scenario, Adam, where you could see one team winning and Diego Pavia somehow getting the award? I want to point this out real quickly. Julian Edlow over at DraftKings pointed out that after the Sayan interception, his number went out to plus 550 to win the Heisman Trophy. He's now plus 145, Mendoza plus 130, because Indiana absolutely obliterated Purdue, but Mendoza, I believe, was what, 8 of 15, threw a touchdown, ran for a touchdown. It wasn't like his numbers were gaudy. What do you make of this Heisman race? Because I think there's going to be a lot of push for Diego Pavia. I understand why, but he's not playing this weekend, and Sayan and Mendoza are.
Yeah, so I mean, I think there's a few ways to look at this, right? I mean, we talked about one of them last week, right? If you take Diego Pavia off of Vanderbilt, do they win 10 games? Absolutely not.
Nope.
Not a chance in hell. If you take, you know, Julian Sayan away from Ohio State and give them kind of an average-ish type of quarterback, something like that, are they 12-0? Maybe. Are they 11-1? Probably. You know, so they're still a really good team. And I think it's the same thing with Indiana, but I do think Mendoza is more important to his team than Sayan is to his. So that's what you're going to run into here, right? It's going to be the voters kind of deciding between that whole thing. And that's something that's been held against Sayan throughout the course of the season. But I think there's also an argument to be made that Kurt Cignetti will run it up on anybody at any time, doesn't care, doesn't give a shit, just runs it up, right? Ryan Day's not that guy. You know, Julian Sayan's had some games where he's barely thrown in the second half. And especially when they were trying to establish the running game, you know, kind of in the mid-season, and it seems like they've done that now with Bo Jackson really emerging. Can you hold it against Sayan if his team's 13-0? And it was just simply a matter of, hey, we're not going to run it up on people. We're going to win with class, as they did against Michigan. Maybe that's why Ryan Day was kind of pushing that narrative a little bit, not only to take a shot at that team up north, but also to be like, look, our quarterback's really good. He's the most efficient quarterback in the country. We didn't ask him to do a lot in the second half. Don't hold that against him. So I don't know, but I mean, you might know this better than I do, because I can barely remember what I did yesterday. Has any quarterback of an undefeated team not won the Heisman? Like, of a power conference undefeated team?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm sure, if I can't think off the top of my head, I'll go through the Heisman. I had these odds lined up, so I wanted to get to it, but I'll circle back to your question here in just a moment. So Pavia, at the two biggest national shops, DraftKings and FanDuel, is plus 340 at FanDuel, 3-1 at DraftKings. I think if Indiana wins on Saturday as a 5.5, 6-point underdog, Mendoza wins the Heisman Trophy. My question is, if Ohio State wins, what happens? And I think there's a lot of variables. First and foremost, let me point this out, and we're going to get to kind of simplistic math here in just a moment. If Ohio State beats Indiana and it's a shootout, I think Mendoza still can win. But is that likely? I don't know. The reason I bring that up, Adam, I don't see really any reason why to bet in Mendoza at this point, right? Plus 115 to win the Heisman. They're plus 185 on the money line. Like, once again, it's not 100% correlated, but I still find it hard to believe Mendoza wins the Heisman if they lose, unless it's a, you know, 45-42 type of game. Then if it's 45-42, Sayan's probably going off as well, so maybe he's better of a look. My question is, if Ohio State wins, let's say 23-16, both quarterbacks are fine, but clearly the best team on the field, best unit on the field, is the Ohio State defense. Is there any reason to look at Pavia plus 340 to win the Heisman Trophy?
I mean, I guess so, right? But again, to your point, you know, I mean, you kind of like to have your guy play, you know, in that final weekend, to be playing for a conference championship. By the way, we only have to go back to 2023. Michigan was undefeated. Jaden Daniels won the Heisman. So it's definitely happened before.
There you go.
I think it happened in 2022 as well, when Georgia was undefeated. But I mean, I guess there's a chance, right? I mean, But I agree with exactly what you said about, you know, there's no reason to bet Mendoza right now because I do think that Indiana has to win that football game. So you just take them on the money line and then plus 180, even if Mendoza doesn't win the Heisman for some reason, hey, you got your cash on Indiana winning the game. So
right.
I completely agree with you there. It's kind of the Super Bowl theory, right? Of like, you know, you can take the quarterback at plus 200 to win the MVP or take the team at plus 170. Like, more often than not, the quarterback's going to be the MVP if a team wins, especially if they pull an upset. So it's kind of that same type of theory. And this is something you can do kind of in these isolated, you know, standalone types of games. So I guess an excellent point that you made. I mean, do as much of a great story as Pavia is, right? And the fact that Vanderbilt has been much better these last two seasons because of him. Do the voters hold some other things against him, right? Do they hold his family dynamics against him? Do they hold the fact that he's played college football for like 12 years against him, right? Because, again, the people voting on this thing, they want to be storytellers, right? They want to be people that have an article to write, have a platform that they can talk about their vote, stuff like that. Like, you know, it's something you have to think about with the award in any type of market, any type of context, where like Shohei Ohtani is going to win the NL MVP every single year. Why? Because he's doing something nobody's ever seen before, and it's very easy to write about and meet a deadline. You know, if you're some reporter, are you going to vote for Diego Pavia and maybe have people in your email talking about, you know, his mom's antics in the stands, or, you know, his brother, you know, getting arrested for public intoxication in that Tennessee game, like all these different types of things, right? You have to not only have to handicap the players in question, but you have to handicap the voting electorate. And so I do think that's something I worry about with Pavia. Not that I give a shit personally, but there's going to be some writer out there who's not going to vote for him because he's guilty by association, not because of anything that he's done.
Well, look, we've discussed it before, and that's why, you know, I take long shots on the Heisman. They're not going to come home. Devin Dampier preseason, Damon Williams. I don't tend to bet into this market just because I don't really trust the voters. And, you know, they got it right last year. Travis Hunter, to your point, he did something we've never really seen before. He was a unique unicorn, which I guess is the same thing. He was a unicorn. You don't have to say unique before it, Tim. Because he played both ways for a Power Four team, and you know, they were a good Power Four team, not a great one, but they were really good. And the same went with Ashton Gentry as he ran for, you know, 2,600 yards or whatever it was a year ago at Boise State. You know, I think we're kind of getting back to the norm here, which is the quarterback of the best team in the country and the winner of the Big Ten championship is going to be the number one team in the country. I think it's simple this way. Indiana wins, Mendoza wins the Heisman Trophy. I think everything goes along with it, right? It's the story that you alluded to. He'd be deserving of it. They would have just beaten the best defense in college football. I don't really envision a route to Indiana winning the Big Ten championship and Mendoza not being a critical part of that. I can envision Ohio State winning the Big Ten and Julian Sang being fine, right? Because he has a running game that seems to be emerging right now. He has superstar wide receivers in Tate and Smith, and he has the best defense in college football. So that's where I'm trying to carve out the path a little bit to what we saw, what was it, 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, when we went into the Pac-12 championship game. Bo Nix was the betting favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. And Oregon loses to Washington, and you saw the market on that night shift considerably to Jaden Daniels. And I think the discussion we all had was that Jaden Daniels was the best college football player. He just played for a team that had a horrific defense, and ultimately the right player won the award. So, yeah, I know we spent a lot of time on this. People don't love Heisman talk. I'm just trying to think about it from a betting standpoint. I do think if you think Mendoza is going to win the Heisman because Indiana wins on Saturday Saturday, then bet Indiana on the money line. And if you think the defense suffocates Indiana of Ohio State, then maybe it is worth finding the best price out there on Pavia. It doesn't feel like it's a great market right now, but I would say if I had to bet anything at this point in time, I guess I would take a little sprinkle on Pavia, because if the Ohio State defense does what they have done most of this year, Adam, which is they have not allowed more than 16 points in any game this season. So if they do that again, I think there's going to be a strong case for, hey, maybe that Pavia guy who led Vanderbilt to a 10-2 season, most wins, I believe, in school history or first time in however long, maybe it's worth that. But I'm not going to sit here and say absolutely bet this, bet that, because I think it is it's a really kind of tricky handicap as we head into this Big Ten championship game.
Well, and, you know, look, I mean, I think it's kind of important, again, to put this into context, right, of you mentioned Jaden Daniels winning the award. Yeah, his defense was terrible. Like, he had to be really, really good for them to win games, right? USC with Caleb Williams, right? I mean, that USC defense gave up almost 30 points per game. Like, Williams had to be really good, had to play the full four quarters more often than not. It's not really Mendoza and Sands' fault that they haven't had to, because right, their defenses have both been really, really strong. So this may just be a year for the Heisman where, I mean, maybe, you know, these guys don't stack up historically with the other players to have won the award. But again, there's still something to be said about, you know, not making mistakes. Neither one of these guys made a whole lot of mistakes throughout the course of this season. There's not a whole lot of interceptions between the two of them. A lot of completed passes, you know, and maybe Mendoza's numbers look a little bit better because Kurt Cignetti likes to run it up. But again, that's not really Mendoza's fault either. So I'm okay with, honestly, any of the three winning. I could make a case for all three of them. Certainly, I hope it's Sand being an Ohio State fan. But again, I see the Pavia case. I certainly see the Mendoza case. You know, I think any of the three could win it. But to your point, right, there is a betting approach to this, which is Indiana has to win for Mendoza to win. So you take the better price on the money line. And if you think Ohio State's going to win and you think Sayan's going to be kind of pedestrian, that's how you justify the Pavia play.
All right, a whole lot to get to, so let's kind of pick them off here. Let's start with the biggest news of the college football world, which is Lane Kiffin going to LSU, and he is leaving his team. And we were wondering when this day would come, Adam, and lo and behold, it's year two of the expanded playoff. So it didn't take that long for a coach for a playoff team to leave in the midst of a playoff run. Once again, everyone listening, they know that this is a betting podcast. I don't really care one way or the other. I have my opinions. I don't think he should be allowed to coach. I think Ole Miss did the right thing in saying, hey, if you want to leave, go leave, but you're not coaching this team. What does this do, in your opinion, to Ole Miss? Because I saw a tweet, I think it was from our buddy Sammy P, who said he talked to an odds maker that said it was a 4-point downgrade to Ole Miss. I texted with Matt Grill from DraftKings, and he said around 1.5 to 2, in his opinion, you know, with some of the other coaches potentially leaving. How do you look at this Ole Miss team moving forward? I don't know if they'll get dinged in the rankings. That is ultimately the question. But how do you look at this from a betting standpoint when Ole Miss is more than likely, Adam, hosting a playoff game in the first round of the playoffs?
So again, much like the Heisman discussion, I mean, there's a few ways to look at this. But I will say this, right? The college football playoff is a TV show. It is a multi-episode TV show. You know, it's a season of a series, right? Is there a more compelling team to follow now in the college football playoff than Ole Miss? Because it seems like the players love Pete Golding. They seem, you know, very happy that he's taking over the program. I think they were all just kind of tired of Lane by the end of this whole saga. And they were just happy to have a resolution and now be able to go and focus on football. They're very compelling. They're a very exciting team. They're a very athletic team on both sides of the ball. I think, ironically enough, I think the way that this all played out kind of strengthens their position for being in the playoff. Because now everyone wants to know, well, how are they going to do without Lane? You know, is this team going to have any sort of issue, distraction, whatever? Like, I think it's kind of compelling. I think it's really interesting. I'm saddened by the way that Lane left. I don't blame him for leaving, because that's a boatload of money that LSU is offering him. And honestly, something has stuck out in my mind for a long time. Ever since, you know, I was hanging out with our old colleague Femi Ebefefe, and He told me, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, he told me that he thought LSU was the best job in the country. And I was kind of taken aback by it a little bit. And I was like, really? And then the more I started thinking about it, the more I'm like, that might not be a bad stance to take. And so
I don't think it's crazy. I don't. You know, you've got to put in the effort recruiting, which Brian Kelly didn't want to do. And that's not who he is. But you have the resources. You have an elite home field advantage. You've got an incredible fan base. You're in the right part of the country to get the most talent. I would probably say the team that you cheer for would be my de facto answer for the best job in college football, Ohio State. But it's a short list, and LSU is definitely on it. So, look, to your point, I get it. I know why you're going to do it. You know, and it was – once again, I'm going down the realm here of sports talk, so I'm going to try to keep it simple. People got mad for a long time that players opted out of bowl games. And I'm like, it's a bowl game. As much as I love them, I love bowl games. I don't want them to opt out, but I get why they do it from a risk-reward standpoint. And then the portal came in, and players were opting out because of the portal. Same thing. You've got a sitting head coach who built a program leaving in the middle of the playoffs. Like, good on Ole Miss for giving them the middle finger and saying, get out. Like, it's a different situation at North Texas with Eric Morris. It's a different situation with James Madison and Bob Chesney if they were to make it to the playoff. And we'll get to that here in just a moment. And it's a different situation at Tulane. Like, as much as you don't want to hear it as a G5 program, you understand it. But when you're Ole Miss and you're battling for the same recruits and for the same reward and for the same championship, it's, of course, you got to say, get out of here. So, look, I agree with you, though. Like, Ole Miss, like, you're an Ohio State fan. I'm a Notre Dame fan. We also have betting standpoints and how we want to get into this. I want Ole Miss to have success outside of playing Notre Dame. I'm going to be cheering for him, man, because you feel for those kids that they busted their ass all year and then their coach is out to go to another job. And not to say that some of those players won't follow him. I'm sure a lot of them will. And I wouldn't push back on following him to LSU at some point, but they're going to play the game and Lane Kiffin's not going to be there. So I hope it's a great atmosphere. I imagine it will be when they have that playoff game at home, Adam. But yeah, I think from a betting standpoint, I don't know. I don't know how much this hurts them. It hurts them because, look, Lane Kiffin's a good coach and he's an aggressive coach. Like, how is Pete Golding going to be as that fill-in coach? I don't know the answer to that.
Well, look, I mean, I've talked about this a lot on the show throughout the course of the season. Like, Ole Miss loves to put up numbers, put up 500 plus yards and win a game by 6, 8, 10 points, something like that. So, you know, as aggressive as Lane Kiffin is and as good as their numbers typically tend to be from a box score standpoint, they kind of let some teams hang around, so maybe that won't be an issue here going forward for Ole Miss. But you know what really annoys me is the people that are drawing this comparison between Florida State and Jordan Travis.
No.
And Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin. Look, Florida State lost their starting quarterback, a guy who had a legitimate argument in the Heisman Trophy race. That was going to really hurt them on the field. And I know they had a bunch of guys, you know, opt out, leave, whatever, and they looked so bad, you know, the rest of the way. But this is dramatically different, right? Like, that was the committee not wanting a Florida State team with no quarterback in the college football playoff. This is still a very good, very talented Ole Miss team. They just don't have their head coach. So these two situations are apples and grapefruits, man. I mean, they're not even remotely close. Not even apples and oranges, because at least those are kind of the same shape. Like, I mean, this is not remotely similar. So anybody who's drawing the Jordan Travis comparison with Florida State to what's going on at Ole Miss here, I think it's a severely misguided sentiment for sure.
A starting quarterback can affect the line. I mean, how much would Diego Pavia affect the line for Vanderbilt? Touchdown? Maybe even more?
Probably more. Like, right?
How much would Clark Lee affect it at Vanderbilt? Think about it that way. And yeah, to your point, this is completely different. And you know, I felt bad for Florida State fans and the players, but also that was a 4-team playoff. This is a 12-team playoff. Right. Florida State would have made a 12-team playoff, right? Even without Jordan Travis. So there is that difference when it comes to that. You know, I wanted to look at the betting odds to make or miss the playoff here real quickly, because on Saturday, you know, it's funny. I live next door to an LSU grad and across the street from another LSU fan. And I was watching the games in my courtyard with the TV set up, and I was cheering so hard for LSU. Yes, I had a small ticket on LSU plus the points, but I wanted them to beat Oklahoma because, to be honest, I wanted this Notre Dame-Miami discussion to go away. And I just think Miami and Notre Dame are better than Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma is elite defensively, but they are far from that offensively. But the funny part was I walked out to see one of my neighbors, and he's like out there putting up his Christmas lights at him. And I'm like, come on, man, I'm cheering for your squads. He's like, I don't care. He's like, I don't care right now. They're horrible. I was like, man, that's where we are in college football. So Miami right now sits at 6-1 to make the playoff, and Notre Dame sits at minus $4. And I think, is it easy to say this before we get into the discussion? And I know it's dominated college football world. If BYU beats Texas Tech, Notre Dame is out. Is the field set if if BYU beats Texas Tech? I just don't think Texas Tech is dropping out of the field. Curious your thoughts.
Well, that's a good question.
Because BYU would get the auto bid. So BYU would be in.
Right.
The question would be Texas Tech, do they get the at-large over Notre Dame? And then you also have to throw in, and we can get into this as well when we look at the betting board, if Alabama remains at 10 on Tuesday night, do they get knocked and dinged if they were to lose to Georgia and potentially fall out? Because number 10 is the last at-large right now, because the ACC and the G5 are not top 12 teams.
So I think if Texas Tech kind of washes out what is probably their best win of the season over BYU, I mean, I guess you could argue their best win is on the road at Utah in the Holy War.
Mm-hmm.
But if they cancel out their, you know, best win, at least in terms of the ranking that BYU had when they played them, I don't think Texas Tech belongs in the playoff. I think they should fall out. And I think that they probably will, too. And here's why. I mentioned this already. It's a TV show, right? Are you going to take Texas Tech in Lubbock, or are you going to take, you know, noted international brand Notre Dame, or find a way to shove Alabama in there, or even a Miami, something like that? I think if Texas Tech loses, especially to lose as a 2-touchdown favorite, I think they would fall out, and I think that they should.
Looking at Jeff Sagarin, I know he's a power rating source that you use a lot. His top six: Ohio State, Notre Dame, Indiana, Oregon, Tech, Miami. By the way, he has Oklahoma at 13. And I'm not saying, and once again, I try to keep us on task of betting versus hot takes. As a football fan, Adam, and I know I'm a Notre Dame fan, so collective eye roll, do your thing. I'd much rather see Notre Dame and Miami in this playoff than Oklahoma. I don't have any interest of seeing Oklahoma. And could these words come back and bite me in the ass if Oklahoma stifles Notre Dame in the first round of the playoff? Sure, it certainly could happen. Their defense is amazing, and they've got, you know, they have the capabilities of turning you over. But I just, the way they play offensively, it's offensive. I mean, it is bad, and they get a broken coverage against LSU where a guy is wide open for 20 yards, and that's the difference of the ball game. I look at this Oklahoma team, and man, I just am not blown away by what they've done. The resume is good. They're going to be in the playoff, but as a football fan, I'd just rather have Notre Dame and Miami in the playoff than Oklahoma.
Yeah, I agree with you. Look, I'm going to look to fade Oklahoma. You know, I mean, obviously it's matchup dependent, but I'm going to really hope that I have the opportunity to do it. I mean, look, people want to talk about their win in Tuscaloosa, and that's fine, right? It's a very tough place to go and win.
5% post-game win expectancy.
Yeah, they got outgained by 200 yards. They had an 87-yard pick six in that game, so that was essentially at least a 10-point swing, if not a 14-point swing, right? And, like, And the sample size of one head-to-head meeting, one data point, shit happens, right? Like, it doesn't mean Oklahoma's a better team than Alabama. I think if they ran it back, Alabama would probably beat them comfortably. But on that day, Alabama threw a 87-yard pick six and only scored 21 points on the 400 yards that they gained, whereas Oklahoma, 212 yards. So, like, I get that head-to-head has to matter to some degree, right? Because otherwise, the old adage, why do you play the games? But sometimes you get that 5% outcome, like you said. And to me, you don't hold that against Alabama. And I don't think that you really prop up Oklahoma for it either, because it was largely a fluky type of occurrence. And in a sport where you've got a 12-game regular season sample size, you know, 13 if you include the conference championship games, like, the margin for error for those things is so small that I think it's almost kind of unfair.
So let's get to Notre Dame Miami from a betting standpoint, because you're just continuing everywhere you turn to see different people coming to the defense of Miami. And look, I don't know if I want to recuse myself from this, but they did play a football game. Miami won the football game. It was in August. Notre Dame has been significantly better since then. Miami has two, I don't know if they're horrible losses. They're not great. They lost to Louisville and they lost to SMU, two four-loss teams in a pretty mediocre conference. We'll get to tiebreakers here on the other side of the break. But when I want to look at it from a betting standpoint. So right now, DraftKings has Miami at 4-1 to make the college football playoff, Adam. When you think about the pressure that has been out there regarding Miami should get in over Notre Dame, plus 650 at FanDuel, is there an argument to make that Miami, on Selection Sunday, so 6 days from today, when they put all the data out there, that they'll flip-flop those two? And is plus 650 worth a look? Or has the committee said it loud enough that we just think Notre Dame is better despite a three-point Miami win back in August?
Yeah, I don't think Miami has any business being in the playoff. I mean, again, sure, they beat Notre Dame head-to-head, right? All right, fine. But also, they lost to Louisville at home, and they lost to an SMU team that just lost to Cal over the weekend with an interim head coach. Like, you have to also put those things into context, where Notre Dame's two losses, the first two games of the year, against a Texas A&M team that was unbeaten until last weekend, and a Miami team that, you know, was really good at the outset of the season, and then they kind of went in a different direction than Notre Dame. And I think there's something to be said, especially in the transfer portal era, of getting better as the season goes along, as opposed to, you know, being a better team early and then kind of falling off a little bit. Also, look, I mean, the ACC championship game is Duke and Virginia. Do we really want to put a second ACC team into the college football playoff? I sure as hell don't think so.
Well, and here's the thing, Adam, like, and I know once again, this is a kind of a off the cuff type of deal, but like, I'm going to give a lot of credit to the American Conference, because the American Conference in tiebreak scenarios, they just say, well, where does the committee have you ranked? And I know it's, as a power conference, you don't want to get into that because you want to believe that, oh, all our best teams are going to be ranked high. Well, in the nature, in the year of mega conferences, these tiebreakers are, you have to have advanced degrees to try to figure them out. And in the ACC, like, as much as I give Virginia shit, and rightfully so, they went 7-1. They deserve to be in the championship. There you go. Off to the championship. We had 5-6-2 teams. And I looked through it. The top four, the other four, so Duke went 6-2. The other four, SMU, their best win, Miami, 6-2. Miami's best win, Pitt, 6-2. Pitt beat Georgia Tech, 6-2. Georgia Tech beat Duke, 6-2. Duke's best win in the conference was against Cal or Wake. Both were 500 football teams. I know the tiebreakers are what they are, but, and you would know this better than I would, I believe in the COVID season, the Big Ten just said, yeah, screw it. We're just putting the best teams in the championship. If you're the ACC, I know the rules have been set in place, but I would just say, well, you know, we didn't know there would be five tied teams. Let's just put the best ranked team in Miami in the playoff or in the championship game. So, look, it is what it is. UVA and Duke will be playing in it. If Duke wins on Saturday night, it's going to open up a very, very fun discussion of will Duke get in? Will the ACC be left out? But tiebreakers, man. They are they're mind numbing. I feel terrible for New Mexico. New Mexico beats UNLV and San Diego State, finishes the season on a 6-game winning streak. But then they go to 4 set of computer ratings, and UNLV, who lost to Boise State and lost to New Mexico, one of the 4 teams they were all tied with, they get into the championship game and New Mexico gets left out.
Yeah, I mean, it's absurd. By the way, a couple of things to talk about here really quickly. So I like Virginia in the game personally against Duke. I have the line -5. I already took -2.5 and -3. It's out to 3.5 now. But similar to what we were talking about in terms of the previous discussion, James Madison to make the college football playoff, no, is -160. The money line on Virginia at DraftKings is -166. So 6-cent difference, but James Madison cannot make the college football playoff unless Duke somehow beats Virginia, right? Because the American Conference team is going to be rated above James Madison.
Correct. Especially really no Virginia. Virginia's already ranked.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, so Virginia would definitely get in if they win, and then the American Conference team is going to be higher rated than James Madison. So, correct. No on James Madison -160 to make the playoff is a better play than taking Virginia on the money line, at least as things currently stand. But speaking of tiebreakers, so the Mountain West one is kind of similar to what happened in the MAC. So Western Michigan goes 7-1, right? They're in the conference title game in Detroit coming up here on Saturday. Miami of Ohio, and Toledo were all tied at 6-2. Miami's 2 losses were Ohio and Toledo. Miami of Ohio is playing in the MAC championship game because they couldn't use the second tiebreaker because Ohio and Toledo didn't play each other. So they go to the third tiebreaker, which is record against common opponents, and Miami of Ohio won that over Ohio and Toledo, even though they lost to both the Bobcats and the Rockets.
Shouldn't Miami, be disqualified?
Right, exactly.
Just remove them. They lost to both of those teams.
Right. Remove them and then go to the next tiebreaker for Ohio and Toledo.
Right.
Is what you should do. But, you know, I just, again, and it's different with the MAC, right? I mean, the Mountain West may eventually have a team in the college football playoff. I think, they did last year at Boise State. They may eventually have another one, right? Especially with all the turnover in the American. But, if you're the ACC, don't you want your best team in the field? Because there's a lot of money involved in this whole thing. There's a lot of revenue.
Miami would have the chance to win games.
Right,
I really
exactly.
believe it. If they were the 11 seed, I think they would be live dogs at Ole Miss, right?
Yeah.
Is Virginia going to be a live dog at Ole Miss? I don't think so.
Probably not. I do think Virginia's a little bit better than maybe we've given them credit for throughout the course of the season on this show. They outgained Duke by 300 yards when they played them 3 weeks ago. So hopefully they just go ahead and blow them out and then we don't have to worry about, all of this discussion. But, this is more of a sports talk point, but it would have betting implication to be sure. Why can't we just do divisions in these super conferences and come up with some sort of formula to where you kind of get shifted around the division based on where you finished the previous year, right? Maybe the division should be 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, et cetera, all on one side, 2, 4, 6, 8, whatever on the other side. And then you reevaluate it every single year to where, you win your division, it means something. That's the way that I would do it. You're going to get these things that you're getting in the ACC when there's 19 teams in the conference. You're going to have a tiebreaker that screws one of your better teams. Why would you want that?
I mean, I think we're getting to the point where we almost need committees for conference championships.
Right? Committees for committees. It's like having a meeting about having a meeting.
Yeah, so Duke and Virginia, I know people are pretty fired up to see that one unfold. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will dive into some of those championship games. A whole lot of coaches on the move as well. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. As always, this podcast being brought to you by our friends at Rainbow Authentics. But before we get into our friends over at Rainbow Authentics, Adam, what do we got going on over at the website?
Well, I'm sure Rainbow Authentics is doing, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, some kind of thing like that. And that's what we're doing over at VSiN.com, our Black Friday special. I know it's Monday. I know Black Friday passed, but just deal with it. That's the name of the special because we do it in advance of the holiday. But $60 gets you an all-access pass through May 1st over at VSiN.com. So we have AI player prop projections for the NFL and NBA. College Football Playoff Betting Guide will come out December 11th over there at VSiN.com. And it's college basketball season. Greg Peterson's doing a daily article. It's busy, man. It's always busy in the sports betting world. We cover it all over there at VSiN.com. So jump on that Black Friday special. $60, all access pass through May 1st.
All right, just a reminder, Rainbow Authentics, your official source of game-used apparel and autographs. We've got some swag from them, which will be given out to listeners. More on that coming up on Wednesday's episode. But they've been awesome all year long. Also, a new line of Tokyo Toe apparel, as he is a finalist for the Lou Groza Award for the nation's best kicker. So TokyoToe.com. But check them out, Rainbow Authentics. You've been seeing me wear the hat all year long. And we're really appreciative of the year that we've had with them. So RainbowAuthentics.com. And shout out to Hawaii. I joked with you before the show, Adam, and credit to Humans as he gave out Hawaii on the podcast. I did not because the line was moving. And I'll just say, apparently the sharps are as sharp as a spoon because I didn't get that line move at all. And Hawaii won 27-7 over Wyoming. And Wyoming did what they always do, nothing on offense. And their lone touchdown came on a pick six. So Timmy Chang in 4 years at his alma mater now, 26-1 ATS at home. And guess what? Hawaii will be playing in the Hawaii Bowl. That will be, I imagine, officially announced later this week. But they're going to be playing in the Hawaii Bowl against an opponent. I think Brett McMurphy tweeted out in his projections, it could be Cal, which would be pretty cool, with Nick Rolovich right now in the interim role as the head coach of Cal. And then Jaron Kiave Sangapulateli, the pride of Hawaii there, quarterbacking the Golden Bears. So that could be a fun one. But just keep it in mind when that bowl game comes around Christmas Eve with the Rainbow Warriors taking on maybe Cal in that bowl game.
Yeah, and again, shout out to Rainbow Authentics. Appreciate you guys and everything you've done here for the podcast. And it's a slick hat. Got some very nice merch there. So, looking forward to seeing what Timmy Chang does here in the offseason, because it's going to be a very important one for Hawaii to try and keep up these new standards that they have. Not new, but the new old standards that they have with this program.
So I know we've got a lot to get to. Championship week. Wes will be on Wednesday. Matt Humans Thursday, as always.
Is Humans actually in Vegas or is he still on a beach somewhere?
He was back this week. He's a man around town.
He is.
But he was back.
He's going to go to the Bahamas Bowl or something, isn't he?
By the way, real quickly, I just wanted to pass this along. Does this change things? This from Football Scoop. Penn State talks with BYU coach Kalani Sitake are heating up. Interesting there. Do you give BYU much of a chance against Texas Tech? I'll take that as a no.
I want to. I mean, I have the line 11, so I'm closer to kind of where it was right at open as opposed to where it's sitting now. But that first game, I mean, it looked like two teams playing two very different football games.
It should have been worse than 29-6.
Yes, it should have been much worse. I mean, that was a game that we had highlighted for a long time, right? Like BYU is going to run into somebody who's going to expose them for what they are. And Texas Tech did that. I will say, though, I mean, I don't think Kalani Sitake is a bad hire for Penn State, by the way. Since that game, I mean, they've won by double digits and really pummeled everybody.
Really good.
I mean, that Cincinnati game wasn't even as close as the score indicates. So they've played well. I think they could probably keep this one closer than they did the first one. I like them to cover, but I don't think they can win the game outright.
So we'll get back to the championship games here in just a moment, but we've had a lot of hirings here over the past couple of days. I'll probably miss a few, but obviously you've got Lane to LSU. John Summerall, he goes to Florida. Alex Golish goes to Auburn. Bob Chesney, the James Madison coach, per reports, is headed to UCLA. Ryan Silverfield to Arkansas. Pat Fitzgerald's going to Michigan State. Thinking ahead to next year, and obviously they're going to have to construct the roster and all of that, but just on the surface, which one of those gets you maybe a little bit excited, or on the flip side, say, I don't get this one. I'm probably going to be looking to maybe fade that team.
Well, I think Alex Golesh going to Auburn is the one I like the most. I mean, you know, Auburn has been in such a tough spot for a long time playing little brother to Alabama that, you know, I mean, maybe they rise up and beat them in the Iron Bowl every now and then, but like they're not getting the same talent. They're not getting the same production. I think this is good, right? I guess this is a really, really good hire for them. It's not some sort of SEC retread or anything like that. You know, it's a guy in Golesh who runs a very modern offense. And in a world where we agree about absolutely nothing on social media, everything is as polarizing as can possibly be. South Florida's athletic director, South Florida fans, anybody associated with the program, everybody is just like universally appreciative of what Alex Golesh did there in Tampa. And also, he was able to keep Byron Brown around for a long time. Now, obviously, money talks and, you know, all of that, but I think there's the way that we see Alex Golesh being sent off by his previous job, when usually everyone feels kind of slighted, but in this case, they're just like, yeah, we get it. Like, you're going to an SEC program. Yeah, we totally get it. I think Alex Golesh is going to do a phenomenal job at Auburn. I really, truly do. And I think he'll have the chance to put this Auburn team back on the map in relatively short order, where the SEC is loaded. You know, I mean, we talk about Vanderbilt, right? They're what, the 6th, 7th ranked SEC team in the top 25, and they're 13th. Yeah. Like, this conference is loaded, but I think Golesh can get guys that want to come and play in that offense. I think his defensive coordinator move is going to be really, really important. But I think he's going to do really well there, you know, with games at Jordan Hare and even, you know, picks him off on the road too.
I think the Ryan Silverfield to Arkansas is wildly uninspiring. You know, Memphis, for those who are not aware, Memphis has the most resources by a long stretch in that conference. And you can kind of tell, to your point about Alex Golesh leaving and everyone being like, oh, man, we get it, but it stinks. Memphis fans are like, all right, don't let the door hit you on the way out, buddy. Like, they are not crying in the streets, right? Beale Street is not mourning right now the loss of Ryan Silverfield. So I think for Arkansas, I don't know. It's one of those things where if you're Arkansas and you're, I mean, reality is what? You're the, I don't know, 3rd or 4th probably looked at worst program in that conference. I mean, you could get to a high level. I mean, think about their basketball program and they go out and they're like, screw it. We're going to get Cal. And this is now what, the 2nd straight former offensive line coach that will be their head coach? And Sam Pittman obviously had ties to the program. I don't know. I was wildly uninspired by that one. I don't think Arkansas, in my opinion, is going to take a big leap because of Ryan Silverfield coming in to be the head coach there. Bob Chesney intrigues me, you know, heading out to UCLA, you know, what he's been able to do. Now, James Madison, as we've seen, was a power in the FCS, and they missed no beat when they went to the division FBS ranks with Cignetti and then Chesney. So I'm curious how he does at UCLA. May take some time. He's an East Coast guy. So is it challenging for him to get, you know, acclimated and how to recruit that area? But certainly they went to the portal a lot And you could see that with UCLA. So, as of now, I'll say this, couple programs hanging on to their coaches, looking around saying, hey, are we going to keep our guy this year? Like Jason Eck, 1 year at New Mexico, he got a contract extension. If he could stay another year at New Mexico, and maybe he's waiting for Luke Fickell to get fired next year, because he is a Wisconsin guy, that would maybe make some sense where he's like, I'm not going to jump immediately. Why don't I build this thing up, have another good year at New Mexico and see how that plays out. But Silverfield to me, kind of uninspiring. You know, Pat Fitzgerald, I think our buddy Brad Powers pointed out, this is what he said. He said, forget the off the field stuff. I don't even think people realize just how bad Pat Fitzgerald was on the field at the end of his Northwestern tenure. So I knew he'd get a job. I don't think it's a bad move by Michigan State to get him, but I think, and I certainly fell into it initially as well, we do kind of forget how terrible things were from an on-the-field standpoint the past couple of years at Northwestern.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, you know, look, I think Jonathan Smith could have worked at Michigan State. I think he made two mistakes. One was, he didn't know the depth of what was going on with the Michigan State program. And it does seem like they kind of kept some things from him because, you know, he had kind of made some comments in interviews and stuff like that, that he didn't really know how severe some of the violations or the sanctions were or anything like that. So I think he's honestly kind of relieved, I would say, to leave that job, because some mid-major is going to get one hell of a college football coach in Jonathan Smith. And we'll see which one it winds up being. I think he'd be a great fit at Memphis, just as one example. But the other is that he brought Aiden Childs with him. You know, he stayed loyal to his quarterback at Oregon State, and it just wasn't going to work. Aiden Childs just wasn't a good enough quarterback to be running, you know, a Big Ten program against some of the schools that they're going to be playing against. So I guess where Smith kind of misstepped a little bit. But yeah, I think he's going to get a really, really good job here. The Chesney one is interesting to me to LSU because, you know, he's really attacked the transfer portal heavily to get his quarterback, and also, you know, to deal with the turnover with the James Madison roster. A lot of guys obviously going to Indiana, but then, you know, a turnover last year, too. How that works in California with UCLA, I don't really know, especially with UCLA leaving the Rose Bowl and playing at SoFi now. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I don't really know. But I will say the one thing that has surprised me thus far with some of these hires for some of these middling teams in the major conferences in Arkansas and Auburn, I guess Florida's kind of middling. We could sort of say that. They all hired football coaches, right? I would have looked at the Texas Tech situation and been like, I'm going to hire a recruiter and then I'm going to put two really good coordinators around him. And then we're going to build out that way, because Texas Tech, I mean, yeah, they had some years with Mike Leach and, you know, all of that where they were kind of, you know, featured prominently in the national landscape, but it's been a long time, you know, and they went out and they got a killer of a recruiter in Joey McGuire and then surrounded him with all the resources and help that he needed. And I'd say it's worked out pretty damn well. So I'm kind of surprised that maybe in Arkansas didn't go that type of route and think outside the box a little bit and maybe get, you know, just a dynamic recruiter. And then worry about, you know, paying some coordinators, you know, decent seven-figure salaries, something like that. I'm surprised we haven't seen that yet. We still could. There are still opportunities for that out there. But I figure people kind of look at the Joey McGuire blueprint and go, all right, well, we hire this guy, we give him 2 or 3 years, and all of a sudden, here we are with this ridiculous load of talent. I don't know. Maybe I would have gone that direction instead of like a Ryan Silverfield type who goes from FedEx money to Walmart money now.
Yeah. And, you know, I've heard Colin Wilson talk about it, as he's pretty piped in with Arkansas and all the happenings down there. They're spending a lot of money on basketball and baseball as well down there in Fayetteville. I didn't mention James Franklin, that had already happened. I do like that hire quite a bit for Virginia Tech. We'll see if this Penn State Kalani Sitake stuff is real. The football scoop, as we alluded to, is pointing it out. But before we get out of here, there are 9 conference championship games. 4 are on Friday for some stupid reason. I don't really understand that, but whatever. I did want to point this out, Adam, and it has since been taken off the board. And if you were quick to it, or you were in a state that had DraftKings, I thought there was an oddity out there, and they have since taken it off the board. But the money line price for North Texas and Tulane in the American Championship is North Texas -135 and Tulane, I think, +115. The reason I bring that up to make or miss the playoff was Tulane +125 on the yes. Tulane is ranked in the top 25 currently by the committee, unless they changed their mind based off of a win this past weekend. So essentially, Tulane was a lock to get in with a win over North Texas, and there was a 10-cent discrepancy. So I don't know if my tweet made them realize a mistake or what, but they have since taken it down. But if anyone wanted an extra 10 cents based off of the difference now, Tulane, I'd have to win the game, right? So what do you make of the American Championship? I think it's going to be one of the better ones. I wish it wasn't on Friday night, to be honest, but it is what it is. North Texas to Tulane losing both of their coaches for this game, after this game, I should say, but they both will be coaching this game. What do you make of North Texas and Tulane on Friday night?
I love this game, first of all. I mean, this is the most compelling of the conference championship games to me. I mean, I know that Georgia and Alabama should be a banger, but like, I feel like I've seen that before, right? I've seen that multiple times before at this point in time. I'm really excited about this game. And I like the fact that Oklahoma State and Florida are both understanding of the fact that these coaches should be with their teams, should be with their programs until whenever this run is done. Obviously, it'll be done, you know, after this weekend for whichever team loses, but it is cool that they're willing to, you know, let them coach this game, coach their teams in the playoff, whoever gets there. I think that's really, really awesome. A couple of things here. So I have North Texas -3.5. So line's pretty close to kind of where I am. That said, there's one data point for North Texas that scares the hell out of me about this game, and it's giving up 63 points to South Florida. Now, Tulane is not as dynamic offensively as a South Florida is, at least not in my opinion. But North Texas, when they really stepped up and played somebody in conference play, they gave up 63 points. And you look at the Navy game, obviously, you know what Navy's going to do. They're going to run the football 95% of the time. But also, Blake Horvath was not healthy for that game. Threw two interceptions in that one. Skylar Cassie did a great job defending the option. Tulane is a multifaceted attack. Jake Retzlaff is their leading rusher as the quarterback. Their defense is definitely one of the better ones here in this conference. I understand why North Texas is favored on the road. And as I said, I have them favored on the road. But I cannot get that South Florida data point out of my head. I can't. I mean, they didn't even play East Carolina, who kind of ended the season with a, they blew out Florida Atlantic, but you know, they weren't really as strong, I think, late in the year as people kind of expected them to be. I mean, they didn't even play East Carolina. So they get 38 to Army in a game that was pretty back and forth. North Texas scares me here. I understand the line. I understand them being road favorites, but that one data point is outright terrifying.
Yeah, you saw the market scoop up the threes pretty quickly. I did not, unfortunately, get in on that. I'll be looking at Tulane or pass here. Once again, you pointed it out, but let's repeat this. A lot of these games are on home fields. All the games on Fridays are home fields. Kennesaw State is at Jacksonville State. Troy is at JMU. North Texas is at Tulane. And UNLV is at Boise State. You know, the Boise State-UNLV game, we obviously saw it already once this year, and Boise State won that game convincingly 56-31. I will give UNLV credit. I think they've been playing better as of late. The question is going to be Maddox Madsen. He is expected to return from injury for this game. That gives them a massive jolt. If you look at the box score from the game that they played earlier this year, Boise put up 558 yards in them, but UNLV put up a ton of yards, only one turnover in that game. You're starting to see the market creep up here. Fours are starting to show up in favor of Boise State. Maybe that's because of the likelihood of Madsen playing. I do have a future on Boise State. We talked about it over the summer. I laid $1.25 with them to win the conference. And I guess right now, technically, it's a good bet because they're up to a -180 favorite. Not sure if I'll take a little bit on the other side. Probably will to try to middle this. But I've been impressed by UNLV lately, especially going to that game against Hawaii where the Rainbow Warriors were a no-show. So I don't know what I'm going to do from a side standpoint in this one, Adam, but the return of Maddox Mattson certainly is a big jolt for Boise State.
Yeah, and this line's actually lighting up a little bit on the odds screen as we're talking here. Within the last 10, 15 minutes, Spencer Danielson said that Maddox Mattson will start on Friday in this game. So that's why this line's kind of getting bumped up a little bit here. And as you mentioned, I mean, Mattson had the 4 touchdown passes in the first game. So, you know, he was a really, really big factor in that one. UNLV is so tricky to me because, I mean, Dan Mullen has certainly improved this team, I think, throughout the course of the season, right? The loss to Boise notwithstanding. But they had that game against Wyoming where Anthony Calandria was terrible. I mean, UNLV scored off of what, 2 blocked punts, I think, in that game. Barely did anything on offense. Now, the weather was terrible. It was temperatures in like the upper 30s. It was sleeting. There was thunder, snow. It was a really strange game, right? Calandria and the offense played really well on the road in Fort Collins against Colorado State, and then on the road in Reno against Nevada, you know, in the Fremont Canyon game or Cannon game here this past weekend. But those are 2 horrible football teams. I mean, I cannot stress how bad Colorado State was by the end of the year. So that's what concerns me about UNLV here, if they can keep pace offensively, because Calandria's got 1 really bad data point in the cold, and then a couple that were pretty decent. Check the weather for this one. From early glance, it didn't seem like it was going to be too bad in Boise on Friday. But, you know, obviously UNLV plays here in Vegas in a dome at Allegiant Stadium. So definitely something you have to consider when you're talking about the Mountain West and a kid who transferred in from Virginia. I have it Boise State minus 2.5 without Mattson. I'd probably be about Boise State minus 5 or so with him. So I agree with where this line is going. I'll be rooting for UNLV, but the first data point makes it tough to really believe in the Rebels.
All right, before we get out of here, Adam, we got 4 games on Saturday, and these are all neutral site games. I don't understand why the MAC plays at a neutral site. They must be getting a bunch of money from Ford Field or something. I don't know. But let them play on a common on the top seeds field. But regardless, I did bet Georgia on the money line minus 120 when it came out. It's minus 130 at DraftKings. I still think that's worth a look. I just have been really impressed. And I know they didn't play well against Georgia Tech. It was kind of an ugly performance. The end of the Texas game was what kind of set me up with Georgia. And I think Alabama, while it's a rivalry game on the road, and I was frustrated that DeBoer went for it on 4th and 2 and would have preferred the field goal. That would have been very nice for a betting standpoint, but he goes for it. He gets it. They win by 7, and I took 6 with Auburn. But what do you make of these games? We talked a little bit earlier about Indiana and Ohio State, that situation from a Heisman standpoint. Only bet I've made so far of the Saturday games is Georgia, I beg your pardon, on the money line. What do you make of the other 4 on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, as you would expect, you know, the lines are pretty tight for these, right? Standalone games, a lot of data points, stuff like that. Like I said, I mean, if BYU touches 14, I'll take a piece of them. I have an 11, so that would be the way I would look there. Western Michigan, I have as a 2-point favorite. Again, Miami of Ohio doesn't deserve to be in this game, but they've gotten some decent quarterback play now that they went to Thomas Gutkowski, I think his name is, since, you know, Daquan Finn's preparing for the NFL. I like Alabama. I have Alabama a 0.5-point favorite in the SEC championship game, so I'll wait and see if a 3 shows up. If it doesn't, I'll be fine with just taking the Alabama money line in that one. Like I said, that game that they lost to Oklahoma, they outgained them significantly. So I think Alabama, and we talked about it on the show at various points, like that game they lost to Florida State, we're going to look back at that all season long and go, what the hell happened here? Alabama's been really good since. Now, Georgia's been really good, too. First game, I felt like Alabama was the better team for the first quarter and a half.
Yep.
I feel like Georgia was the better team after that. So we'll see. I think it's every bit of a coin flip, so I don't mind taking Alabama on the money line there. I like Virginia minus 3.5. I have it 5. Like I said, 3 weeks ago, they badly outgained Duke, dominated that game in Durham. I think they win here and take care of business. Indiana and Ohio State, I mean, weird dynamics, right? Like, you want to win the Big Ten, but also this game doesn't really matter a whole lot. You're still going to get a bye. You're still going to be a top 4 seed. Heisman Trophy is hanging in the balance. any hangover for the Buckeyes off of beating Michigan? Possibly. Indiana, I mean, the thing that's tough about this game is neither one of these two teams has really played a close game in the fourth quarter all that often, to where Julian Sain or Fernando Mendoza have had to be good in the fourth quarter. So I could see a variety of different outcomes in this one. I do think Ohio State wins, but I would take Indiana plus the 5.5.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time handicapping that one. Been impressed, obviously, by both these teams. There will be motivation. Indiana's never won the Big Ten, so you could argue they might be more motivated. Who knows how this all plays out. But Adam, always appreciate it, sir. Come next Monday, we'll have a playoff bracket. All the bowl games ready to go. Next Monday has got to be like an early Christmas for us.
Oh, looking forward to it, especially if the bowl games are better than they have been in the past, because the transfer portal doesn't open until January 2nd this year. They righted that wrong. They still haven't figured out how to keep coaches from leaving college football playoff teams, but at least they've figured out to open the portal after most of the bowl games. So hopefully we don't get a ton of opt-outs and actually get some decent matchups this year.
Yeah, I'm hoping for it. Adam, always appreciate it. That's Adam Burke. Read everything over at vsin.com. We've got a great special, as he mentioned earlier, at vsin.com. You know the drill by now. If you haven't done so, please rate, review, and subscribe. Every episode up on YouTube as well. Come Wednesday, I'll give you a little more information on some of the swag we'll be giving out to all of you guys for being loyal listeners all throughout the football season. Thanks for producer Rick stepping in for Wyatt, who magically is not here after Michigan lost to Ohio State. Funny how that works. Also, Ryan Hunter, our producer. I'm Tim Murray, back on Wednesday with Brett Ciancia and Wes Reynolds. I think he'll have something to say about Indiana and Ohio State. This has been the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.